Paul is answering a letter from the church at Corinth that he founded. And this letter has question after question, because so many things have come up in the church, so many problems have come up in the church, that he is answering the questions. These are new believers, and you can understand this, beloved. New people come to faith in Christ. They don't know anything about marriage. They don't understand anything about what does the Bible say about this or that. And so Paul seeks to answer their questions. They write him about marriage itself, because apparently in Corinth, several things were happening. People were coming to Christ, and they were saying, well, now that I'm come to Christ, I no longer have to take care of my husband or my wife. I don't have to meet their needs. And so they weren't. And so marriages were struggling. Then there were people who were saying, well, what do I do about, I'm single. Should I get married? Should I wait on the Lord? And last week we talked, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about waiting upon the Lord. And that if you are, that Paul says celibacy is a genuine option. That if you're a Christian, if you belong to Jesus Christ, you need to commit to being celibate, which means that you don't have physical relations with anybody until God brings the right person into your life. And that you make a commitment before God to say, I will not have physical relations with anybody, and I want to honor God with the life he has given to me, and I want to keep myself pure. Why? Because I belong to Christ. And everything Paul talks about, he talks about this from this one's perspective. Jesus Christ is Lord. That's not a slogan. That's a new way of life. That means that if I come to Christ, that I bow the knee to him and I say, yes, Lord, yes. You, whatever you say, you're the new boss of my life. And so if you say this, I have to do it. It's not a question. It's not an option. And so now Paul talks about permanence in marriage. And beloved, there's a reason why he talks about permanence in marriage, is because marriage is hard. I want to show you a quote that was on Facebook. I love this quote because he's an idiot. Just saying. This is his quote. This was on Facebook. If these first 4 weeks are any indication, marriage is going to be a breeze. They're not. Because the Bible teaches us that marriage is hard. This is a great quote, and I'm happy for this kid, but it's 4 weeks. You know what? You can do anything for 4 weeks. I'm just saying. Let me just talk to you about marriage, and let's take two verses. I have all six, I have seven listed there, but really all I have time for today, I want to do a brief message on verses 10 and 11, because these two are part one of Paul's talking about marriage. He's going to do two parts of advice. One part is he's going to quote Jesus and deal with specific commands from Jesus about marriage. Let's look at verses 10 and 11 only. Now, to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and a husband is not to divorce his wife. Now, let me just give you very quickly some living truths on marriage, okay? Number one, marriage is dying to self for the other. If you look there in chapter 7 where we're studying, Paul talks about this. He says, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. In marriage, two people choose to die to serve the other. That's marriage. That's why I say it's not easy. I don't want you to be deceived. Marriage isn't two people going out on a prolonged date. That's what the world wants you to think it is. That's why in high school you want to break up and make up and you wear 50 people's ring and you get the idea that marriage is just flitting from one relationship to the other. It is not. Marriage is a covenantal relationship where I lay down my life for the other. I choose to do what is best for them. I die to self and I choose for them. Now, because they too die to self and choose for me, I'll get to do some things I really positively love and enjoy. But there will be some things I'll die to and give up for their sake. Marriage is a death. Now, I don't mean that badly, but following Christ is a death. Christian marriage is so different from the world's marriage. In non-Christian marriage in Rome in Paul's day, the man owned the house, and if the woman didn't like it, anything he did, she just had to leave. That was it. She didn't have an option. It's like in Muslim cultures today, if a man wants a divorce, he just has to say, I divorce you three times. The woman has no rights for divorce. And in many Roman, in the Roman culture, it was like that. It was all about the man. And women suffered. Jesus lifted women. The Bible lifted women more than any other book, any other religion in the world. The Bible gave women status and equality and treated people as equal partners, complementary in marriage. The husband brings his part, the wife brings her part, and they love one another. The Bible elevates the role of the woman in marriage. But do not be deceived. Marriage is not a cute little dating relationship gone long. It is two people, like the old way they used to say it, I plight thee my troth. Not even sure exactly what it means, but it sounds really serious, you know? Because what it really means is I commit myself to you in a covenantal relationship, and I commit to love you till death do us part. And love, in the biblical sense, is not feelings. The word agape has no connotation of feelings. When it says, for God so loved the world, it didn't mean he felt loving, felt gushy on the inside. It means that it is a word of total commitment. And that's what you do. That's why Paul uses this word in the Ephesians 5 passage. He says, you love your spouse. It is a word of commitment to your spouse. It's not a word of feelings. How many of you can say, every moment of my marriage, I've just liked my spouse and didn't want to choke the living heck out of him? Yeah. Of course, nobody, you know, only single people think marriage works like that. You know, they're thinking, oh, I can't wait till I get married and we have everything is romance and stars. It's like, you know, sometimes Iva wants to choke me and I want to grab her neck while at the same time I can see us dying in a chokehold. You know, both of they find our bodies lying there with our hands around each other's throat. They think, what happened here? Well, it explains itself. And she's wonderful. I mean, she really is. She's a great wife. But beloved, if you get the idea that marriage always works and everything is great, you got the wrong idea about marriage. Marriage is a dying to self. It really is. It's a death. And listen, let me say this. It is God's plan for your sanctification. Now, what do I mean by this? There's a book that's out that I made several people married, and I may have made John and Audrey read this one. It's called Sacred Marriage. What if God designed marriage to make you holy instead of happy? Well, you see, in other words, let me tell you, how does that work? Well, what is holiness? It is becoming more like Jesus. How do we become more like Jesus? Well, we rub off those parts of the world. And God uses sandpaper to rub those parts of the world off. And guess who the best sandpaper in the world is? Your spouse. They're the worst, roughest sandpaper ever. You thought you were just alike till you married them. They are the sweetest thing. You just can't believe they are so wonderful. I can't wait. And they're... And you know what's the truth? I mean, that's exactly what happens. And there they are, you know, you're with them and they're just all sweet, lovey-dovey until then later. You know, it's like, how come you don't ever pick up your socks? Do you just not know how to get them from here to there? You don't have to. This is not confession time. This is sermon time. It's like I said to Iva one day, I said to her, I don't like green beans. And she said, what? We've been cooking green beans for 25 years. And I said, all the kids remember this. We were all sitting there. I said, I don't like them because Iva believes cooking green beans involves moving them slowly over the steam once so that all of the crunchy is still in them. And for me, I like green beans to look like they died and they're, you know, floppy and lying over and covered in bacon fat and, you know, just oozing unhealthiness, but tasty. But now that I think about it, where was I going and how stupid was I? But the point is marriage is designed to sanctify you. God puts that spouse in your life. And you see, and the truth is you may marry them and they may be a lot like you. They really might be. But what God's going to do is he's going to exploit every weakness and every difference for the glory of his name and for the upbuilding of your spiritual life at the expense of death to self. God's goal in marriage is to hasten that death to self for the other by putting somebody in your life whom you thought was like you and who turns out to be somebody who rubs you in all the places where you don't want to be rubbed. And you got to understand this. We have a great relationship. I love my wife. And this is not all autobiographical, but it's truth. This is true with every one of our marriages. If we were honest with one another, and we could really peel back the curtains and not worry about what everybody thought about the church, you know, what are people going to think about me? We would all testify to this, that marriage brings out the best and the worst in us. Marriage is both the best and the worst. Marriage, and it really does, I'll just throw a third thing out real quickly that Paul brings out. Marriage is distracting from service to the Lord. You know, we'd like to serve the Lord, but you know what? Ladies, you'd really love to serve Jesus, but then your husband wants the meals fixed, and he wants clothes pressed, and he wants his things done. And you know what? You can't serve Jesus and do that too. So you're distracted. Now, that is service to Jesus in a sense. Don't misunderstand. You are serving Jesus when you minister to your husband. But it doesn't feel like it. It's a lot more spiritual to be here at church doing spiritual things than cooking. Because church service looks more spiritual than cooking looks. But it's really not distraction, but it feels like it. And that's why Paul even says in 7:32, he talks about the fact, he says this, I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. If you were unmarried, if Steve Lindsay were not married, he could gallivant around the globe, go do mission trips, do whatever he wanted to do. He doesn't have to check with anybody, ask anybody, do anything. But because he's married, he's got to have a job. And you say, well, you'd have to have a job otherwise. Not necessarily. You might find a way. You know, there are guys that find a way to get people to support them, and they don't have a job. They just go do ministry. But because you're married, you have to provide for your family. You have to provide a house. You have to provide for cars, insurance. You got to provide for all those things. And so, therefore, you're distracted in your service from the Lord. Marriage is a distraction. And it really is. And these are living truths on marriage. And then lastly, and this I've been saying this, but let me just say this. Marriage is the best and worst relationship. It's the best because you live with your best friend. I mean, if your marriage is working like it ought to, you ought to be living with your best friend. Because here's what marriage ought to be. And young people, here's what you want to find. You don't want to find the worst slug in the world who's a jerk or she's a vamp for everybody else and say, boy, I won her. You want to find somebody that's solid, steady, dependable, whom you grow in a joyful relationship, whom you grow to say, I could spend the rest of my life with this person because I enjoy being with them. I like them. I enjoy our time together. In fact, the day ought to come where you say, I can't imagine spending the rest of my life without this person because they're my friend. They're my closest confidant. They're the person I really love, and I enjoy being with them. It's like having the best friend in the world with benefits. I mean, you go to bed at night, you wake up the next morning, you think we're still buddies. There's no guilt. There's no shame. We're still friends. And it's awesome. Same truth, though. What's the other half of this equation? You live with your worst enemy. Now, why do you live with your worst enemy? Is there your worst enemy? Because they know every button that can be pushed. You know, casual acquaintances don't know the buttons that drive you nuts, but your spouse does and knows how and when to push them. And when they push that button, it's just like, war is on! You shouldn't have pushed that button. And for the next days, it's frosty around the house. Nobody's talking. And the kids know it's like, hey, we could skate in on ice skates, Mom and Dad. Things are going on here. You know, it's like, well, yeah, because your worst enemy opened her mouth and hurt my feelings. You should know what your mean mother did to me. Now, let me ask you this. All right, you married people, are these living truths on marriage? Yeah, they are. This is the truth about marriage. And that's why I say to you, when Paul writes, he's writing to real people with real marriages. He's not writing to book people who write romance novels. He's writing to Christians who are struggling with real marriage in a world fallen, sinful, pulling at marriage. Everything you watch, everything you listen to, pretty much everything the world is putting out is demeaning toward dads, destructive toward the sanctity of marriage, and wants to break down every facet of true Christian marriage. And so you're swimming against the flow in every way. You are. When you choose to stay married, you're swimming against the flow. And so that's why Paul then quotes the Lord's teaching on marriage. When Paul gets ready to talk about marriage to them, he says in verse 10, I command, yet not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. So Paul quotes Jesus' teaching. Here's the Lord's teaching. He quotes Jesus. He really goes back to Matthew 19, verses 4 to 6, where Jesus deals with the Pharisees, and the Pharisees come to him and say, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? There were two schools of marriage in the Jesus day. There was the school of Shammai and Hillel, two famous rabbis and their followers. And basically, one school said, you can divorce your wife if she burns the toast. Basically, the I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, three rules, three times rule, and you can divorce her. The second said, no, divorce is only for about 15 very serious things. And so they asked Jesus, which school are you in? And Jesus said, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not in a school. Let's go back to the author. And Jesus begins by quoting Genesis. It's no surprise that the enemy wants to destroy the book of Genesis, because in Genesis, the foundation of almost every major doctrine is laid. All right? Notice what he says. Jesus says this in Matthew 19. He says, and he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning, Jesus goes to the beginning to build a doctrine. What is God's original intention? At the beginning, made them male and female, and said, for this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Now, this is Jesus' teaching, okay? Jesus teaches on permanent marriage. And I want to say three quick things he mentions. Number one, it was planned in the garden. God's plan for marriage is laid out in the garden. God brings a wife to Adam. He doesn't bring two wives. People said, well, you know, what's wrong with polygamy? We've had arguments put forth for polygamy. And people, but God brought, even though for the procreation, for the filling of the whole world, God still only brought him one wife. And that was enough. And so God brought him one wife, and he brought him a wife, not another male. God brought one wife. It was planned. It is the principle of two becoming one. Jesus makes very clear there. He says, the two shall become one flesh. Marriage is becoming one flesh. It is a uniting of the person's lives, body, soul, and spirit, but not in that order. The order in which we unite truly is spirit. And guys and young people and those of you who are unmarried, the goal is to find somebody who is spiritually right for you. Start spiritually. If you can't, you know, I meet people say, well, you shouldn't pray with them because that builds intimacy. I say, if you can't pray with somebody, you shouldn't ever even consider dating them. Pray with them. If you will make commitment to end every relationship, every night you're together, every time you're out, if you end with prayer and you seek the Lord together, God will knit your hearts together spiritually. But not only this, God will guide you away from the wrong ones. You know, I got saved at 19 and I dedicated my dating life to the Lord. And then I began to pray, God, do you want me to get married? And the Lord would bring into my life, through various means, church services, ministry opportunities, beautiful Christian young ladies. And he taught me a valuable principle. I began to pray when I met them. And I'd go home and I'd pray about her all week, and by about halfway through the week, it'd be like, the interest would be gone. And I thought, how strange is this? But I realized how confident I was. Now you say, how does that work? I don't know. But I believe that if you Christians will learn to pray about every person God passes through your life, he will give you guidance, and he will bring the right one in for you. Just like God planned the right spouse for Adam, so God planned somebody for you. And if you will trust him, he will bring that person into your life. And you don't have to fear that God's going to hate you and miss you. He wants to bless you. So it is a principle of two becoming one, and it's permanent. Marriage is permanent. The plan of God is for marriage to be permanent. Paul says, if she does depart, if the wife leaves the husband, she needs to remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And the husband is not to divorce his wife. God's standard, God's plan, is for marriage to be permanent and for us to guard that marriage. So if you two get into a serious brawl and you say, I'm leaving, my hope is that when you get to the house, your mother puts you on the bus and sends you back and says, go make it work. Because marriage ought to be two people committing together till death do us part. That's God's plan. Now, let me give you some, and I'm going to finish with these. Now, let me give you three things. Let me give you three lasting rules for marriage. Don't enter marriage lightly. Okay? Don't enter marriage lightly. Today, people take it lightly. Why do you think I give such harsh counsel, make people take it so seriously? Because marriage is serious. The problem is we have a generation of people who think marriage is kind of like breaking up with a high school ring because they've been taught that all the way through high school. Marriage is not that. Marriage is a covenant. It's a lifetime covenant. And if you believe that and you pray toward that end, then you won't enter into it lightly. You won't flit through 20 broken relationships. You will wait on God for the right one. Second, make your marriage a priority. You want your marriage to work? Then make it work. Make your marriage work. This is what Paul's really saying here. Marriage is hard work, but if you work at it, it will be a beautiful thing. Make it work. Work on loving your spouse. Work on waiting for the right person, and then work on making that relationship work. Do not expect your spouse to carry you. You have to put, and I meet people who say, well, it's a 50-50. No, it's 100-100. It's a death thing. You got to put your whole heart into it for the rest of your life. You are in it for the long haul. Beloved, you belong to Jesus. Make this marriage work. Commit to each other. Don't do anything less than what God requires to make a holy marriage work. Love your spouse. Lay down your life for them. Serve them. You say, that's hard. Grow a backbone and do it. We have a generation of soft people who just don't want to pay the price. And let me tell you this. You'll think, oh man, the grass is greener over there. Let me tell you something. It's toxic. Nothing will be worse than the pain. I was reading Tim Keller's book on marriage. And Tim Keller talked about how he quoted a girl who had written an article in the New York Times magazine and how she had violated her marriage vows. And her parents had 50 years of marriage together. And she said the pain and the shame came crashing down on me. And I looked and I thought, what they have is so much more enduring. And it is. And it takes work. And you know what? There are going to be flashes where something pretty is going to come by, something shiny is going to come by. And like an ADD kid, you're going to want to reach out and go for it instead of staying focused. Stay focused. The shiny stuff never lasts. That's why the Bible says at the end of the Proverbs, beauty is vain. Favor is deceitful, but a woman who fears the Lord, she'll be praised. Third, if you have been divorced, if you've gone through the heartbreak of a divorce and you are remarried, this is the marriage you make work. Listen to me. You do not beat yourself up over the past. The past is just like ancient history. You can't change yesterday. You can't change last year. If you have gone through the heartbreak of a divorce, you're not a second-class Christian. You're God's child. You make this marriage work. You love this spouse. You have entered into a new commitment. Keep it till death it. Seriously, don't beat yourself up over the past. You cannot. You move on. You say, you know what? I have a hurt. Because I've never met anybody who went through the heartbreak of a divorce that says, gee, I'm praying my kids will go through the same thing. I sure hope my kids go through two or three hurtful divorces. Nobody says that. Everybody wants better for their kids. They do. And better means a marriage that works and lasts. So you can beat yourself up over the past, or you can say, God, here I am. I'm in it for now. Because what Paul is going to do at the end of the chapter, in verses 17 to 23 of this verse, he's going to say, stay in the calling where you're called. And that's exactly what he means. It applies. It's a principle that applies to all areas of life, but it certainly applies to this one. Make this marriage work. Love your spouse. Don't beat yourself up over the past, but just say, by the grace of God, I'm going to say to the world, by God's grace, this marriage, we're going to make it work. It's not a testimony to your righteousness, but listen. I was my first spouse, hopefully my only in this life. But our marriage didn't succeed because we're better than anybody else. Only by the grace of God. Because marriage is hard work. Marriage is costly. Marriage is death. Now, you hear me say these things, and I think, I don't want to discourage you from marriage, but I want to paint the truth. Marriage is a life laid down. It is hard work. But we who are children of God, in order to honor the Lord Jesus Christ and to glorify Him, we choose to die to self and to say to a watching world, I am a sinner, but by the grace of Jesus, I want to make my marriage honor the living God. So, I know this is a strange message to preach. I can't get away from, you know, preaching through 1 Corinthians. We're going to hit other stuff that's just as strange. But I hope that you hear from God's word the seriousness and the joy of marriage, and yet the seriousness of it, that God demands we work. Now, I want to make an invitation, and here's the invitation. If you don't know Jesus, I want you to know Jesus. He can so change your life. He can give you power to die to self. Instead of living for self, you can live for others. Second, if you have a marriage, if you are married, I want you to make a fresh commitment with your spouse. Lord, help us make our marriage work. Help us to stick together no matter what comes, no matter the trials, the battles that we face. And you know you will. Lord, help us to make our marriage work. And I want you who are husbands and wives to take each other's hands in the invitation time and pray, God, guard our marriage and make it work. And help us to make this marriage bring you the glory that you deserve as Lord of marriage. Because he's the Lord of marriage. If you're single, I want to ask you to say, Lord, I want to wait on you to bring the right person into my life. I don't want to take it lightly. I want to make you the Lord of my marriage. And I want to wait on you for the right person, the right time. I know these are hard commitments. Jesus doesn't ask you to do easy things. Anybody can ask you to do easy things. The King says, I'm worth it. Follow me. And he is worth it. He invites you to come and die. To die on the altar of marriage. To die and to say, Lord, I'm single and I'll wait on you. I'm married and I'll die and serve my spouse. Maybe you just need to come to Christ, and I invite you to come to Jesus. Because he's the reason why we uphold marriage at all.